Is being a developer a gene, or is it a socially learned thing?
Both, I'd say. Well, the reason why I became a developer is because I was just always around computers at home. Besides my mom, my dad liked to collect computers and liked to repair them, so we had about 10, well, half of them working. But but then he'd collect computer games for us, too, so we were always rushing home to play computer games. When I was a kid, I would get books from the library about programming, and so I was always around it and really interested in it. And eventually, of course, sure. Decided to do.
So, what's your favorite programming language?
Depends. I guess for ease of development, definitely C sharp. My cell phone, but C++. I've had good experiences with it too, so I still love that.
Sure.
In college, what languages did they teach you?
Oh, so it's just C++ for me to
turn that up. No, that's okay. Kind of goes well.
It's theme music.
That's right.
Make it up and dance.
That's funny, Steve.
So what languages did you learn in school?
C, C++. Well, they were starting to get into Java by the time I was graduating, but not so much. I didn't take any classes teaching Java. I just took classes where they expected you already know Java, and so I was just mostly learning that on my own.
But since you've been here for 6 years, what things did school not prepare you for in a life in Microsoft or in the software industry?
Windows in general, man. It's Unix in college. They don't really teach you how to use the Windows API. So it was a pretty rude awakening. I hadn't used COM before, and you pretty much need to know when you're working on my part of the project. So it was a quick ramp up required.
The industry over the last 6 years has really focused a lot more on security. How has that affected you, your life as a developer?
We spend a lot of time concentrating on making our code secure, and we try to include that in the design as much as possible, and as well as later on going and making sure that we haven't left any bugs in. So like I said, we just finished our security push, so we spent a few weeks.
Can you tell us some of the things that Microsoft or the developers on the .NET team do to try to minimize the security risk, or things that now you look for that you might not have looked for, 6 years ago or in college?
Just from the design, we try to make sure that we're thinking about the whole time, and that we have that whole list of things from past security pushes that have things to keep in mind and to make sure that we don't.
All right. So do you do threat modeling then?
Okay.
So that's probably a change right there, right? Thinking through the attack surfaces on your product.
It's true. It's a lot more than the static analysis tools for code. It's design time, as you keep saying, is when the security stuff starts.
Yeah, you don't want to have to try to put security back in when you've already finish the feature.
Exactly. Design it secure up front.
Yeah.
Fantastic. What are some, in your opinion, what are some of the benefits of managed code? What would you tell somebody that, a friend of yours who's a dev, C++ dev?
Yeah.
What would be some of the benefits that you would say are?
Oh, it's so much faster to write your program in managed code than unmanaged. It's the from the start to finish, it's just much shorter time. It's just astounding how much time it saves you. And just the ease of development, and you don't have to know as many low-level things as you do if you're running straight unmanaged. You can just use a library that already does it for you, and it's simple to use. So it's just nice.
Agreed.
If you had a meeting with Bill Gates, what would you tell him?
He used to give us more resources, man. We're an important group.
That's a good thing. Is the team hiring?
We always have openings, so yeah, we're always looking for good people. So, yeah.
And how do new hires get on the how do they get noticed?
Okay, so there's a website that, you know, just the general Microsoft jobs website that that we...
But let's be honest, is that really how you get hired here?
Yeah, it's pretty hard to get your foot in the door that way. You know? And so, if you've been working with Mandicode on your own, then that looks really good. Like, I know a lot of people who have been just doing their own projects, and they get noticed and...
Link to your blog and say, hey, check out my new cool app, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, hey, Brad Abrams hired Joe Duffy from his blog.
All right.
Yeah.
I did not know
and
that.
Chris Brom actually hired somebody from his blog.
Oh, I'll have to ask him.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
And whether or not we get to keep this on tape is up to PR, but we probably should be able to.
Yeah, yeah.
But the other point is, somebody kept asking Chris, you know, really excellent questions. And they started having very good dialogue,
Gretchen,
and he was like, wow.
Gretchen and Zoe over on the jobs blog said more than 6,000 resumes have come in just off of their blog. So blogging is a good way to
get a good tool.
Well, yeah, there's actually one person on our team who was asking me questions on my blog, but he didn't get his job that way.
Oh, okay.
It's just a coincidence. Okay, but, yeah, I can see how that one.
Are there any good books? I noticed you have quite a few books over on your shelf. Are there any books that you would recommend .NET programmers read?
So actually for .NET, I would recommend that you look on the web instead of reading books, because it changes so fast that the books just can't keep up. So.
Okay. My friends at Microsoft Publishing won't like
that. Yeah, they probably won't like that. But like, some of these books, like the Common Language Infrastructure and Data Standard, that's already outdated.
Yep.
It's just so new. Mm. So I get the latest version of MSDN and look there. Even better, look at the blogs, because they're even more up to date. MSDN is 3 months behind.
Right.
And that book right there, everyone, that's never going to go out of date.
Creating Secure Code?
Yeah.
Yeah, some books that
Michael Harris book,
we
interviewed him too.
We interviewed him.
Anything else that you would tell an MVP or a developer who's sitting here with you for the first time about working here at Microsoft or developing code here? What kind of tools, for instance, do you use to develop the product?
Oh, so actually I use Emacs for my editor.
Uh-oh.
So I have a good excuse that I work on the runtime. It's not really convenient to use Visual Studio because they're using the runtime themselves, and so it'd be really slow if they used a debug version of it. So,
come on.
But I do use BS for my debugger, so...
But really? Now who decides what tools? Here at Microsoft, you get to decide what tools you use.
We choose which tools we use, unless there's some reason why everyone on the team needs to use the same tool, like for source code.
Sure, right. Well, I mean, that brings up a really good point. I mean, use the right tool for the right job. A lot of people get, you know, again, from threads that we have going on Channel 9 right now, a lot of people get confused with, they get too many stars in their eyes. So use managed code for everything. Use Visual Studio. No, use the right tool for the right job. If you're working low level on the CLR, you're writing unmanaged code.
Yeah.
Use your favorite unmanaged editor. The fact that you're actually using the VS debugger says a lot about the quality of the debugger. And
I use it for debugging unmanaged code. So
very nice.
Yeah.
And you think that's common amongst the unmanaged developers out here?
So on this team, then, like I said, it's kind of inconvenient to use BS, especially since you have to re-download new versions in order to match our version if you needed to use it for debugging managed code. But for me, I found that for debugging my type of code that I normally do, then it's much faster to debug it using BS than using other unmanaged tools. So...
So speaking of bugs, what's the hardest bug you've had to fix recently, if we can even talk about it?
Oh, well, recently...
It can be vague.
Oh, yeah, I haven't really had any hard bugs lately. We've just I haven't been really fixing bugs as much as looking for bugs because of the security push.
Understood.
But...
Have you found some doozies, or...
No, actually.
Good. All right.
So you had to put your black hat on and start hacking around and trying to figure out people would break in the system.
But we've had I've been here for the other security pushes, so so we already looked for the same things in past versions, so we're not as likely to find those this time.
What are the weaknesses in .NET? Where do you expect developers to hit some walls that maybe you wish weren't there?
Well, so I guess you want to control memory management more, then it's kind of inconvenient with managed code. You want to, but I mean, there's ways to make it work, but sometimes it depends on what you're doing. If you really want to do that kind of thing, you can just use unmanaged code and then interoperate with managed code. But if you don't need to do that, you just want to do normal application, no one needs to worry about it, managed code's good enough.
Right.
And, well, some people are worried about the performance of managed code, but for the things I've needed to do, then it's actually pretty fast. I haven't had any complaints about it. As long as you, well, there's ways to make it bad for perfect, but as long as you don't have really ugly things in your loops that end up taking a lot of time, then it's really good.
What are some of the other bad things for perfect that you were thinking
about? So for example, this project I was doing over weekend just for fun, then I was just creating this program to generate statistics, and
Just for fun.
Of statistics.
Just for fun. Yeah. That's the definition of a gig. Instead of seeing you write a statistic. Right?
But so anyway, it's something that would be running for hours, and I noticed that I was creating too many, I was allocating too many things, and it was causing too many DCs. And so once I took that out of the loop, then it was really fast. I was really impressed by the difference. It was just because of my own bug that it wasn't managed code that was causing it.
GC is a garbage collection.
Yeah, so okay. That you just need to make sure you're doing smart things in your code.
What causes too many GCs? What was?
So I was allocating something over and over in each iteration of the loop,
okay.
And then it'd be thrown away and then have to be cleaned up eventually. And since I was doing billions of loops, then that's expensive. So it's really a huge difference if you don't do that.
Right.
I mean, it's a great point. By just the comparison of managed versus unmanaged, when you just say one has bad perf, you know, or like it's slow or whatnot. I mean, which is typical amongst, as you experience. It's all how you design, right? So you can design an application in managed code that's very performant, or you can design one that isn't, and then you figure out what it is, and then you fixed it, and now it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, image processing and stuff, low-level kind of things, drivers, etc., there's certain times when you have to be unmanaged.
Read
Rico Mariani's stuff on MSDN, everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the guy has written extensively about it and others, so...
Yeah, there's a link to his blog online, so good stuff.
Okay. What are some of the trends over the next year or two that you're going to have to retrain yourself? You know, like we were talking with Herb Sutter about concurrency, and the processors are actually changing to be more multi-processor on one processor, and that's forcing him to go back to school, really, and learn how to write, you know, multi-threaded and concurrent apps. What do you think over the next 2 years you're going to have to relearn?
Well, I guess it's not so much that in my case as in we have to listen to our customers and their feedback for what they like and don't like about our stuff and that how we can redesign it to be better. And so our past ways of thinking need to sort of be reanalyzed and decide if that's really what works for our customers. So, you know, after working here for a few years, you get a certain mindset of what is the right thing and the wrong thing to do, and, you know, you have to sort of re-educate yourself about that for once in a while.
Do you play with competitive products, you know, like Apple or Linux, and try to keep up to date on what other methodologies are going on out there?
Not as much as I like. I'd have to... I should be doing more of that, though.
Well, this is never going to be PR, so...
You never know. Let me put all this other stuff outside.
Well, I mean...
now you just ruined it!
Well, one of the questions I like to ask, theoretically, the CLR was designed conceptually to be platform-independent, or at least processor-independent, correct?
Well, yeah, that's the hope that it can be...
used on multiple platforms.
Well, yeah, so it can be written for, like, they can write their own runtimes for their platforms, and it'll be kind of like how the Java runtime is.
Okay. Yeah. So is that something that we're thinking about for the future, to actually...
Well, so, like, with Mono, then they're already... been working on that.
He said the M word, so we're definitely
this whole sentence is gone.
It doesn't matter. It's just an interesting thing, and I want to talk from about it as well. You know, about like what's the future of the CLR on multiple platforms. Okay. Obviously, I and all of us want it to mainly run on Windows. We want people to use Windows, but the fact is, it would be nice to.
Oh, it already. We have the compact framework on my smartphone, right?
And good point.
We have, the .NET runtimes running on the Dell Superdome over in the SQL Server team. Yeah.
So the CLR is basically going to be everywhere, is the point I'm trying to make. It's going to expand out into the whole ecosystem.
Yeah, I hope so.
Computing. Seems like it already has.
It's getting really popular just within Microsoft already, and a lot of customers outside of Microsoft are getting excited about it. So.
Certainly. And I know that's all. I only program and manage code.
Yeah.
I haven't written it. Unmanaged code since I was on the Windows team.
So
I don't even remember. I don't even know how to do it anymore.
I forgot it all.
Yeah, it's great. Fire up Visual Studio and type away and compile and run it. Looks good. Perfect. So we've taken up a fair amount of your time.
Do you want to come and meet some of the other people?
Yeah,
sure.
Let's do that.
Yeah, we got 15 minutes of tape left. So. All
right.
Make sure I come back here for my jacket.
This is just random tours.
You faked me out.
It's best to fake him out.
He's not there. This is my boss. He's the lead for the loader team.
All right.
But he brought in Castidus for Venus. Let's see. Who else is here? Richard. Thanks for telling me. So, Richard is Richard Thunder. He's the PM for the Loader team.
I learned to take pictures of people's name plaques, otherwise I'll never remember.
Great.
So, do you want to tell us what you've been working on lately?
Triaging bugs. really important and useful stuff.
Yeah, look at her.
Oh, look at her,
not. Yeah. Don't look at the camera.
So what kind of bugs are they this time? So we're done with security push now?
Yes, we're done with security push. We hit zero, and I moved the last one from security push to beta 2, so that's how we hit zero.
Too hard a bug to fix?
Yeah, way too hard. Yeah, exactly. And then, we're just trying to figure out why we have so many non-blocking bugs in beta 2 left. So that's what I'm working on right now. So we either have to make them blocking or do something else.
So by non-blocking, can you explain what that means so that our audience understands?
The viewers at home?
Yes.
Yeah.
Non-blocking means that it doesn't break any of our tests currently, either our self-host or self-test tests. And also there hasn't been a partner team that has complained about them. So they're just bugs that we've found that we know the code's broken, but there isn't anything specifically that we've observed breaking because of that. So, anyway, those become less of a priority because no one's really complaining about them. So, that's kind of the story.
Great. Well, nice to meet you.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll figure some things
out. Yeah, another good lady.
That's
pretty good.
There's actually quite a few.
Yeah. I don't care if it works on your machine. We are not shipping your machine. Humor. So who else? What part of the building is this building 42, right?
Yeah.
So all the CLR. In fact, I think we did a tour down this hall.
A tour down this hall with Josh, Jason Zander.
Yeah.
Hey, Tiffany Kurtzman was working on the setup and metadata, and she was going to tell them about what you've been
doing. Right now I'm working on Stack Overflow on the product. I'm working on Stack Overflow just to make sure that if the CLR hits a Stack Overflow or if managed code hits Stack Overflow, that we won't completely blow up and we'll try to do something that borders on sanity.
What kinds of things would cause a Stack Overflow?
Somebody writes bad code. You know, just a function that calls itself again and again and again will eventually blow up because of Stack Overflow.
So when you say do something that won't blow up, so you're gonna
we want to make sure,
an exception type.
Yeah, we want to make sure that if somebody causes a Stack Overflow, that we don't have a security hole in the product. You know, that's the big thing, that we don't want to get the CLR in a bad state where suddenly Joe Hacker can come in and format hard drive. We want to make sure that, you know, if it means shutting down, it means shutting down, but not giving anybody access to your machine.
So that if someone just catch Stack Overflow Exception E, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you're going to prevent that kind of bad programming practice. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this whole notion of the new exception model, we're going to come back and once we have more information, we'll do a whole series on it with Christopher Brom and other people. It's excellent. It's great work. I mean, most people take it for granted, the complexities of the managed exception model.
Yeah.
But now we're meeting somebody that's doing something about it.
Yeah.
Great.